Morning. Today's daf in Chulin is Yudal. We're on the top of Yudal Amud Aleph. We're starting with the Mishnah today. Our discussion today is going to focus around when. First Mishnah in the Masechta talked about the question of who can shecht. So who has the entitlement, who has the ability to shecht. So that is what we've been discussing since the beginning of the Masechta up until yesterday's daf. We covered both basically everybody. Well, that's the first Mishnah, called Shochtin. And who is everyone coming to include? So that was the discussion. And an ensuing discussion in the Gemara regarding who's in, who's out, who got cut out from Shechita. And then the next Mishnah talked about a Goy Shechting. That's already back on Yud Gimel. That's yesterday's daf. So the first question of the Masechta of the Perek is who could Shecht. Next question is when. When can you Shecht? So that was yesterday's Mishnah on Yud Gimel Amud Beis, where the Mishnah said day and night. So you could Shecht the daytime, nighttime. There's really no limitation when you could Shecht. Yes, we pointed out at the end of yesterday's daf, there's a difference between nighttime Shechting with no light and nighttime shechting with light. Nighttime shechting with no light, that's only a bidiyavit. Nighttime shechting with light, that's a lechatchila. Good, that's what we discussed in the course of yesterday's daf. We are now going to be discussing, what about Shabbos? Can you shecht on Shabbos? So the answer is no. Right? I'll open up the discussion really easy. No, you can't shecht on Shabbos. It's one of the melachas on Shabbos. Shechit is one of the 39 melachas. You cannot shecht on Shabbos. However, what if you do? So what if you shecht on Shabbos? What if you shecht on Yom Kippur? I mean, I understand Yantif, but the reason the differentiation, which we all know, the difference between Shabbos and Yantif, is in Yantif you're allowed to shecht. Yantif, even though there's Nisr Malach on Yantif, but nevertheless there's the Heter of Ochel Nefesh. So you're allowed to prepare food. There are significant limitations in terms of what kinds of malachas you're allowed to do for the purpose of preparation, but you're allowed to prepare your food on Yantif, including the act of Shechita. So Shechting Yantav would be okay, but Shabbos Yom Kippur, it's not okay. And so what if you do? So again, the starting point is we don't. It's a malacha. But what if you do? So that is where the Mishnah picks it up. On Yudal Amud Aleph. Hashoch b'Shabbos v'yam ha-kippurim alfa pishim ischai b'nafsho Shechita k'sheva. So the Mishnah says that when you shecht either on Shabbos or on Yom Kippur and you're mischai b'nafsho, it is an Isser Shabbos. It is a capital crime to do so. A person would be chai benefesh. Chai benefesh meaning that if he received a warning, he's chai bidei adam, he's chai misa bidei adam. If he did not receive a warning, it's a chiv kares. So in either event, it's an issa daraisa coupled with a punishment of either capital or kares punishment. But in any event, the Mishnah tells us that the shechita would be a good shechita, despite the fact that the person did something which was terribly egregious. Okay, and for the bulk of today's daf, or let me say it even clearer, for the remainder of today's daf, we're going to be discussing the issue of muksa. But before we get to the issue of muksa, which is going to really consume us for the entirety of today's daf, and also, by the way, tomorrow's daf as well, not the entirety of tomorrow's daf, but for a good part of tomorrow's daf as well, we'll be discussing muksa. But nevertheless, let's first wrap our head around a basic issue that's discussed in the Mishnah. Tosfos himself picks it up right over here on the top of the Amud. Hashoch b'Shabbos afilu b'meizid by lukumi. So, and even if the person does it b'meizid. Now, it's interesting. Later the Gemara is going to be discussing whether it was b'shogi, whether it was b'meizid. I mean, the Gemara is going to make this point. It seems pretty clear from the Mishnah the person's doing it b'meizid. Because look at the language of the Mishnah. Afa pishim ischai b'nafsho. It sounds pretty clear that it's meizid. But in any event, tema. Tosfos says it's really, really difficult because ibe mezid hechshita sok shera v'hamu melachal shabasos asol achol mishchita sok demuchach leel. So you go back nine blot ago to daf hey, and you'll remember we talked about various types of mummer. A mummer ledavar echad, is he a mummer legamre? So predominantly the opinions are no, he's not. A mummer lechal shabbos, a mummer lavodah zarah is a mummer, which basically means that all rights and privileges of being a Jew is stripped from that individual. And that means that the person can't shecht. His shechita would be ki'ilu, a non-Jew would shecht an animal. And so Tosfos says, so I don't understand, we have somebody who's shechting on Shabbos. Clearly he's a mummer, not just a mummer lechal Shabbos. And so shouldn't it be that his shechita is no good? Shouldn't it be no different than a goy shechting? That's Tosfos' question. Tosfos gives two suggestions in terms of how to deal with this very significant problem. Va'od, and I'll just, the next couple lines of Tosfos, Va'od de gemar by lukumi b'mezev rabbi mev rabbi meir isle b'perek ad kama u'v'perek zebore demom l'davar echad avimom l'chol atar kula. The question actually gets compounded because according to Rabbi Meir, a mom l'davar echad is a mom l'chol atar kula, so you don't even need Shabbos. But In any event, you have a guy shechting on Shabbos. The Mishnah says the shechita is a good shechita, even though what he did was egregious. Okay, good. You already got one of the answers. So the even though what he did was egregious, and meanwhile the Tosfos is bothered by the simple fact that he's a mummer and he's a mummer l'chal Shabbos, and that should preclude him from shechting, and that should mean that a shechita is not a good shechita. Okay, so that's Tosfos's question. Tosfos gives two answers over here, two suggestions. So one possibility is as follows. Even when we said that a mummer l'chal Shabbos is a mummer l'chal tzar kula, so the Gemara was very clear back on Daf Hey, and Tosfos is just reminding us, that means a mummer l'chal Shabbos bifar hesya. It's really interesting. Why it's the case, I asked the question back then, I'll ask it again right now. I'm not sure, but the fact remains that a mummer l'chal Shabbos is only a mummer l'chal tzar kula when he does so publicly. And it could be, says Tosfos, that over here, our person who's shechting the animal on Shabbos is doing so privately. So yes, he's a mummer l'chal Shabbos, but no, he's not a mummer l'chal tzar kula because it's not bifar hesya. That's one suggestion. But again, we set up the mission like Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that even a mummer l'davar echad is considered a mummer l'chal tzar kula. So that answer does not seem to ring true in our Mishnah. And Tosfos attacks the problem from a different standpoint, and that is the following. When exactly do you become a mummer? The first time that you violate the Torah, let's say you do so b'mezid. Okay, even intentional violation. But at that point in time, are you mummer l'chal tzar kula? Or do you have to be a repeat offender? And what Tosfos is now suggesting is that it's not the first time that you're going to be a mummer l'chal tzar kula, but rather you have to be a repeat offender. You have to violate the Isser multiple times in order to become a mummer. And it could very well be that our Mishnah, even though it's describing somebody who's amazed, nevertheless, it's a mummer l'chal tzar kula he's not a mummer l'chal tzar kula because he's not a repeat offender, and it's only on maybe the second, maybe the third time, not clear. But in other words, but you have to be a repeat offender in order to be considered a mummer. Okay, another suggestion of Tosfos in terms of why such an individual is not a mummer l'chal tzar kula, and why it is that the shechita is in fact a good shechita, as the Mishnah concludes. Okay. From this point going forward now, as we start with the Gemara, there is really one issue that's going to consume us, and that's the issue of muksa. Let's consider now, okay, even before we start with the Gemara. What do we have over here? We have an animal that going into Shabbos was a live animal. That means that I can't eat such an animal, okay? So a live animal that I'm not allowed to eat. So going into Shabbos, that means that animal should be muksa, right? And then we shech the animal. So we shech the animal on Shabbos. Again, it's a violation of Shabbos. You can't do it. You're not allowed to do it. But you shech the animal on Shabbos. Okay, good. So the point the Mishnah wants to make is that the shechita is nevertheless going to be a valid shechita. That's the point of the Mishnah. But in other words, what we are now, think this through. Considering the idea of eating the animal, are we allowed to eat it on Shabbos? After Shabbos, of course, we're allowed to eat it. The animal was shechted. But on Shabbos itself, are we allowed to eat it? Well, going into Shabbos, it was not edible. And generally speaking, the little right now we know about muksa is that if something is not available and accessible going into Shabbos, so therefore it is muksa for the entirety of Shabbos. So if you think it through, actually it makes sense that we're not allowed to eat it over the course of Shabbos, but only after Shabbos. Good. What the Gemara is going to do is make such a statement, and what the Gemara is going to now try to do from that point going forward for the remainder of today's daf is identify the author of the statement and where do we see this most clearly. Am Rav Huna Darish Chiya Bar Rav Mishmei De Rav. So Rav Huna quotes by Rabbi Chiya Bar Rav in the name of Rav. So as we get to the end of today's daf, just remember, all this was a statement made by Rav, and that is Asur Ba'achila L'Yuma. For the remainder of Shabbos, you're not allowed to eat it because of a muksa consideration. And it's only after Shabbos, then are we allowed to eat it. Okay, Adkan. That is the statement. And for the rest of today's daf, it's just a simple analysis of when we say that is Shitas Rabbi Yehuda. I'm sorry, one more line of Gemara. V'nizben chavrei lamemer Rabbi Yehuda hi. And now, as the Chabur got together and as everyone looked at each other and went over the statement of Rav, so everyone identified that the author of that statement, well, no, we know Rav said it. He was the Baal HaMemra. But in terms of whose position is that contingent on, who is that being somechan? That's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Good. So now, from this point going forward, so now what the Gemara is going to try to do is identify. We know Rabbi Yehuda says a number of things regarding Hilcha Shabbos, and specifically as it relates to Muksa. Which statement of Rabbi Yehuda does this become most clear and evident that you're not allowed to eat the animal that was shechted on Shabbos for the remainder of Shabbos? Where do we see this most clearly? And so that is the rest of today's daf. Hi, Rabbi Yehuda. So which Rabbi Yehuda are we dealing with over here? So the Gemara now starts a lengthy discussion. Number one, Amar Rav Abba, Rabbi Yehuda de'achanihi. So it must be the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda of Hachana, did not? And here we have a Mishnah in Beitza. The Mishnah says, Mechatchin is adulun lefnei behema, ve'es ha'nevela lefnei ha'klavim. So you're allowed to cut up a vegetable, a gourd, in front of an animal, and the nevela in front of the dogs. Meaning that what the Tanna Kamma over here is entertaining is the following. We have different foods that I like to feed to my animal. Dog food, good. Now the dog food is, right, my dog likes gourds, my dog likes to eat nevela, great. So can I cut it up for him on Shabbos? The answer is yes, but the Tanna Kamma is actually saying a much bigger chiddush. Let's talk about where the gourd was not ready before Shabbos. Meaning, as Rashi points out over here, Rashi, Esadulum Hatulushin, so Rashi says that they were taken up from the ground. But in other words, Ve'esa Nevela Afilo Mesa B'yama Shabbos. So we're talking about where these items were prepared. Where the items were not prepared before Shabbos. Despite that the gourd right now is separated from the ground, but going into Shabbos, it was still connected to the ground. Somehow it got plucked out of the ground. I didn't pluck it out of the ground. In other words, I was not a Mechal Shabbos, but going into Shabbos, it wasn't prepared. Mm-hmm. Similarly, with the Nevela, before Shabbos, the animal was alive, and then it died on Shabbos. According to the Tanna Kamma of this Braisa, neither of those would be an issue. You would be allowed to cut the animal up for, you'd be allowed to either cut the gourd or animal up for my dog to eat on Shabbos. Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Im lo aisa nevela me'erev Shabbos, asur lefi she'enem anamuchan. To which Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you cannot. Rabbi Yehuda subscribes to the Muksa principle. Now, by the way, this is a point which you're going to hear numerous times as we discuss Muksa. The Tanna Kamma has a much more limited understanding of Muksa. It's not that the Tanna Kamma dismisses Muksa outright. As we see throughout Shas, there is a constant tension between the Tanayim, how expansive, how wide the principle of Muksa applies. Right? The language you're going to hear elsewhere in Shas is going to be Rav Yehuda Islay Muksa, Rav Yehuda holds of Muksa, and Rabbi Shimon Laislay Muksa. And Rabbi Shimon doesn't subscribe to Muksa. But the Gemara is not to be meant in the most literal sense. It just simply means that Rabbi Yehuda has a much more expansive view of Muksa, and Rabbi Shimon has a much more restricted, limited view of Muksa. So over here, the Tanna Kamma just does not file this under Muksa. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, no, this files under Muksa. Meaning that if the animal was not available before Shabbos, you can't use this animal, cut it up for your dog to eat on Shabbos. Asur lefi she'enem minamuchan, because it's not minamuchan. And so what we have over here is a machlokes between the Tanna Kamma and Rav Yehuda. But what we have clearly over here, and the Gemara spells it out, Alma, kevin dolo itken me'ismol asura. Hachinami, kevin dolo itken me'ismol asura. What we have over here is a very clear indication that, according to Rav Yehuda, if something was not prepared before Shabbos to be consumed on Shabbos, therefore it's muksa. It was muksa ben hashmashos, it will continue to be muksa for the duration of Shabbos. So too, over here in our Mishnah, when a person shechs an animal, so too, it's the same principle. Because the animal was not prepared before Shabbos, going into Shabbos, so therefore it will be muksa for the remainder, for the balance of Shabbos. Good. It seems like right now we have a winner. We now know which Rabbi Yehuda it is that represents our Mishnah, and the discussion should come to an end. It does not come to an end. Not in the least. Amalei Abaye Midami. So Abaye says, look, the cases are somewhat comparable, but there is a important distinction to be made. Hasam ikara mucham la'adam v'ashta mucham la'klavim. Hacham ikara mucham la'adam v'ashta mucham la'adam. Let us now make very significant differentiations between these two cases. In the case that we just cited regarding the gourd and regarding the nevela, we are talking about a scenario in which it was muchan leklavim, and therefore it cannot be reassigned. Meaning that in our Mishnah, we're talking about stam, it was an animal. It was an animal with no clear indication of what purpose it was going to be. So in other words, and we have to assume, which the Gemara is doing right now, that's muchan la'adam. Meaning, if I have an animal in my farm, in my herd, so eventually, what I of course plan on doing with that animal is we're going to end up shechting the animal and eating the animal. So it's muchen la'adam. Now, I know, and this is a subtle point, and it's really important also, but it is subtle. I know, of course, that going into Shabbos, I am not allowed to eat it now going into Shabbos, because once I didn't shecht it before Shabbos, I can't shecht it on Shabbos. But in terms of assignment, it is generally assigned to me, meaning I'm right now thinking that how we are going to eat it, we're going to consume it. Maybe not this Shabbos, but in general, we are going to eat it. The consumers are us. However, if we're talking about a nevela, so who is going to be able to eat nevela? Not us. Yeah. Only the animals are allowed to eat the nevela. To which Abaye is now saying, that's why the cases are not comparable. So over there, mikara muchel adam v'asha muchel klavim. You see, over there, going into Shabbos, remember, the animal becomes a nevela on Shabbos. Going into Shabbos, who is the assigned consumer? The assigned consumer is you and I. And now the animal dies on Shabbos without the benefit of Veshchita. Do you know why Rav Yehuda is crying muksa over there? Crying is not the best word. But do you know why he's calling out muksa over there? He's calling out muksa because you can't reassign a consumer. If the assigned consumer is me, so now on Shabbos itself, I can't reassign it to a new consumer. That is a violation of muksa. Masha'in came over here in our Mishnah, going into Shabbos, who was the assigned consumer? Me. Who continues to be the assigned consumer after I shecht it? Me. So it's not the same.
Gir Toshav is not a consumer for the nevela.
What Gir Toshav what? Who?
Is Gir Toshav eligible to eat that nevela besides your animal?
I see what you're saying. Yeah, you're right. He can eat it. He can eat it. But we are talking about, yes, in other words, but you can't just look at the possibilities of who can eat it. You have to look at who the designated consumer was going to be. And the designated consumer was going to be you and I.
The way it's implying is that the only consumer is the animal. But
it's just a question of where was it assigned to be eaten by. Who is generally planning on eating it? Okay, but I do hear your point. So hacham ikar muchan ladam v'asham muchan ladam. I'm sorry. So midami ikar muchan ladam v'asham muchan laklavim hacham ikar muchan ladam v'asham muchan ladam. Sorry. So mitzvah is behema bechayel la'achila omedes behema bechayel la'gadol omedes. So what the Gemara now is going to try to argue is the following. I don't think the cases are as different as you're presenting. You're presenting that when Rav Yehuda, when we're attempting to reassign something, Rav Yehuda is going to call out muksa. But if we're not attempting to reassign something, so Rabbi Yehuda is not going to call out muksa. That's the distinction between the Mishnah of Nevela and our Mishnah where you have a shochidu shechting on Shabbos. To which the Gemara now is saying, I don't think the cases are that different. Because let's consider, when you have a stomach animal going into Shabbos, are we right now thinking about consumption of the animal? Not necessarily. Meaning right now, let's say the animal is not so old. It's a year old. It's 2 years old. And right now, I plan on keeping that animal around for some time. The animal providing milk, we're working the animal. The animal is also good for breeding. There's a lot of good reasons right now the animal should be kept alive. So one, you could really make the argument that going into a Shabbos, so really what is the assignment of that animal? The assignment of the animal is not consumption. The assignment of the animal is we want the animal to live and breed. The Gemara says, Mitzvah is behema bechaya l'achila omedes, behema bechaya l'gadel omedes. We really want it to breed. So before I get to the next question, the Gemara. And so now, if you think about it, the cases are actually very similar. Our Mishnah here in Chulin on Daf Yadal is talking about where a person checks on Shabbos. Was there a reassignment? Well, the Gemara is arguing right now is, yes, there was. Going into a Shabbos, what was the designated mindset of that animal? Legado. Somebody shechs it on Shabbos. Oh, so you know what? Change of plans. We're all going to eat it now. That's a reassignment. Just like the case of the nevela. In the case of the nevela, so if we're going into Shabbos where the animal was alive and well, it dies on Shabbos. So going into Shabbos, we thought about the consumer being you and I. Now on Shabbos, the consumer is going to be dogs. Reassignment. So the truth of the matter is in both of them, there is a change of assignment. And just like Rav Yehuda says in the case of Nevela, the animal is going to be Muksa, so too over here it's going to be Muksa as well. And so right now what the Gemara is trying to do is resuscitate the comparison between the two cases.
Does the resignment make it a Nolad?
It's a form of Nolad, that's correct, yeah. That's right. So Yahachi behema l'Rabbi Yehuda b'yom tov hechi shachtinan. So to which the Gemara says, you really are looking at it that way? So then I have seemingly a bomb question. And that is going to be, every time you go into Yantiv, let me ask you a question. How do we shecht our animals on Yantiv? Meaning, on Yantiv, as we discussed in the beginning of Shir today, there's a heter of ochel nefesh, including that heter is the ability to shecht an animal. And so we're shechting an animal on Yantiv. But consider, the way you just formulated it is that every animal going into Yantiv is a sign for what? Legado, breeding, milking, working. And now, when we're shechting it, we're reassigning it. And Rabbi Yehuda then says, oh, that's a violation of Muksa. Oh, that's true. Every single Yantiv and every single animal should be a violation of Muksa, meaning that we should not be able to eat the animal after it was shechted as it has experienced the reassignment. Now, you know there has to be an answer to this question, right? Like the Gemara asked just a day ago, right? We're not going to arrive at the conclusion that he didn't eat animals on Yantiv. Although over here it's not as bad because you could just simply say that he shechted it before Yantiv and ate it on Yantiv, but still, meaning the idea that we're just going to ban Shechita on Yantiv when the Torah gives a clear heter to shecht on Yantiv, you know there's an answer to the question. What the Gemara presents over here is a fascinating answer to the question. Amar lo ames l'chita v'ames l'gada. So the Gemara says, well, in terms of an animal, whether it's a sign for working and breeding or whether it's a sign for consumption, actually both. Meaning it can go on one of two tracks. And so, nishchata huvra de la chila medes, lo nishchata huvra de la gada la medes. And in terms of which track does it go on Shabbos? Well, it depends. If I shecht it, so then it went on the eating track. And if I didn't shecht it, so then it was on the legado, it was on the breeding track. Now, the Gemara to this way says, wait 1 second. When is it super important to establish which track is it on? I can't make that decision on Yantav proper. In other words, the place where the two tracks divide are going to be when on the entrance of Yantav. Bein Hashmashos of Yantav, that's when we need that assignment to be identified. And right now what the Gemara is arguing is, well, on Yantav itself, when I shecht it, so basically we now know retroactively which track that was on. That only works if you subscribe to Breira. And is Rav Yehuda a subscriber? That's going to be the next part of the Gemara. V'halesli l'Rav Yehuda Breira. The Gemara says, I happen to know that Rav Yehuda is not a subscriber. He does not uphold the ideas of Breira. And so therefore, look, it's ingenious the way you presented it, but it only works if Rav Yehuda subscribes to Breira, and he does not. Now the Gemara says, now how do I know he does not subscribe to Breira? I'm in Alan. Enem and Beditanya. So the Gemara is going to make a couple of attempts to prove that Rav Yehuda does not subscribe to Breira. Meaning, we know the conclusion is he doesn't. And because he doesn't, we know that this is not going to be the way to explain Rav Yehuda that an animal going into Yantiv has really two paths it can go down. And if I shecht it, so then retroactively I know it was going down that path. This is just, it's just now a question of how do we arrive at the conclusion that Rav Yehuda does not subscribe to Breira? So in round one of trying to attempt to prove the point, the Gemara quotes a Breisa that is really often quoted. I say often quoted, you can see on the side of the Gemara. It's Baba Kama, Demai, Sukkah, Erevin, Me'ila, Gittin, Yuma. Okay, it's all over Shas. We get to hear this time and again. The Gemara over here quotes the Breisa, L'kech, Yami, Ben Akusa, Nomer, Shnei, Lugin, Shani, Yasi, La'afish, Harehen, Truma. Asara, Meister, Rishon, Tisha, Meister, Shini, Omecha, Vishosim, Yad, Divreb, Meir. Let's get the case really clear. You purchase wine from a kusi, and then what? Now, Rashi over here writes as follows. A lot of important information out of Rashi. Rashi over here, La'ashmina dekusim chashunim ala truma ve'inam ka'ame arish alakech mehem ain't tzarech la'arish truma gedola kedinan lefisha shalach yochanan kohen gadol b'chol gvul yisrael v'rashi emafrishin ala truma gedola bavad alma atruma lo chashida v'ashmina hacha dekusim chashida truma. Point number one, Rashi. Kusim and Ame Aretz actually are in two different categories. They're in two different camps. And Ame Aretz takes off Truma. A Kusi does not. Okay, that's point number one of Rashi. Then, Kediktani Shnei Lugin Shani Asi La'afishu Mishna Zukodim Takana Degazu Al Yenam Nishnis. Point number two of Rashi. You're buying a wine from a Kusi? Aren't we not allowed to buy wine from a Kusi? Wasn't there a ban of buying wine from a Kusi? So, point number two of Rashi is that this was done... this Breisa was written and edited prior to the ban. Next point in Rashi, what is going on over here? Why don't we just simply take off Trumas and Maisos? What are we doing drinking and then leaving over the Trumas of Maisos at the end. Next Rashi. Omer Shnei Lugim im ein lo kelim lahafrish. So Rashi over here gives a couple of scenarios in terms of why it is we don't do what is just normal, which is take off Trumas of Maisos first and then drink the remainder of the wine. So Rashi presents one possibility, which is ein lo kelim. Right now, this is the only bottle that you have. It's the only bottle that you have, and so therefore wait till the end. In other words, we just simply don't have another kli to pour in the Trumas of Maisos. And we're certainly not going to just simply spill on the ground. That's Ibu Trumas of Maisos. We can't do that. So fine. So, oh, Sha'isa Chashecha Belal Shabbos, She'ein Shal Sahafrish. Or it is right on the cusp of Shabbos, the entrance of Shabbos. We know that you're not allowed to take off Trumas of Maisos on Shabbos. So therefore, what we're going to do is we're going to drink, and then the Hafrasha will come only at the end. Okay, a couple of scenarios in terms of why it is right now. We don't do what's normal, which is first take off Trumas of Maisos and then drink. Here we're going to go in the opposite order. We're going to first drink and then we're going to leave whatever's over for Trumas of Maisos. And so the Braisa over here. Now let's see the Braisa again, and I'll just slow down just a little bit. Halokech yami ben akusim, so I buy wine from the kusi. Omer, shnei lugin shani asid lahafrish. So the first two lug that I'm going to separate, meaning not right now, I'll wait till the end. So that's going to be my Truma Gedola. Truma Gedola is how much? 1/50. And there's a range. It could be a 40th, it could be a 60th, whether you're generous or whether you're cheap. But in other words, the average person will give a 50th, which is 2%. So of the 100, two, let's assume there's 100 there to begin with. So two of it now is going to go to the Kohen. But again, I'm not separating it now. I'm planning on leaving that over at the end. Hare Hein Truma. Asara Maisa Rishon, 10 is going to be Maisa Rishon. Now the numbers over here could just simply be an approximation, because if 2 were taken off for the Kohen, so that leaves only 98. So really it's 9.8 that should be left for Maisa Rishon. It could be an approximation. There could be actually a fancier way to explain it, but for our purposes right now, this is fine. So 10 now is going to go as Maisa Rishon. 9 is going to be going as Maisa Sheni. Maisa Sheni, the first, second, fourth, fifth year of the Shemitah cycle, the next 10% is going to be going as Maaser Sheni. Now, Umecha, the way Rashi understands this is that with Maaser Sheni, you don't actually have to wait to the end. With Maaser Sheni, the Maaser Sheni has Kedusha, it has to be taken to Yerushalayim and eaten to Yerushalayim, or transferred onto money, and the money's taken to Yerushalayim, where you're going to buy food in Yerushalayim and eat that food in Yerushalayim. Nevertheless, with the Maaser Sheni, because you could redeem it right now, do so. Redeem it right now. And then Vishos Miyad, and then you could drink it right away. So basically, in a pinch, what the Braisa just taught us, where for whatever reason, Rashi offers two of them, for whatever reason, I can't take off Trumas and Maaser right now, I can first drink with the plan of whatever's left over is going to be my Trumas and Maaser. Okay. How does that work? Presumably, it works through the principle of Breira, meaning that whatever I leave over will be not only my Trumas and Maisers then, but retroactively I now get to look back historically and say, that's the part that I plan to separate even from the beginning. Good. That is Rabbi Meir's viewpoint. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Osrim, and on the other side, I have Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, who all say that it would be prohibited. Now, why? Why do they say it's prohibited? So even before I get to turn the page, I mean, I did already, but if I could just, you know, if we could just guess, educated guess, because they don't subscribe to Breira. Meaning, on one hand, you have Rabbi Meir who does subscribe to Breira, and these other three Tanaim, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon, do not subscribe to Breira. And that would be the easiest way to explain it. And if that's true, so there is a clear indication that Rabbi Yehuda does not subscribe to Breira. However, now turn the page, Yudal Amud Beis, top of the Amud, Hasam Kediktani Taima. The Gemara says over there, it happens to be that Breira is not the issue. What is the issue? Amru lo li Rabbi Meir, iatamod shem yivaka anod. So they say to Rabbi Meir, that is a risky behavior. How can you do that? Meaning you're going to be drinking something, only waiting to the end to separate Trumas and Maisos, and what if the jug were to break? Now that means that all that leftover wine that you planned as being Trumas and Maisos are now lost, which means that Trumas and Maisos were not separated, and Trumas and Maisos were not separated. So then you drank Tevel Lemafreya. And that's very risky behavior. So Amr Lamir, Atamalisham Yivaka Novinim, so shows the Tavalam Lamafreya. So Amr Lam Lachishi Yivaka. And Rav Meir's response is, I'm not worried about that. The risk doesn't bother me. Now it's really interesting, by the way, just in general. You thought like me. I'm happy. So it's really interesting because generally throughout Shas we say Rav Meir's Choshesh Lamiuta. That Rav Meir is concerned about the small percentage chance of something happening. That's Rav Meir's Shita throughout Shas. And meanwhile, over here, Rav Meir on this particular scenario says, I'm not worried. Right? Rav Meir seems to be more relaxed than his usual disposition in halacha. Okay.
If the jug breaks, why isn't that not considered onus?
In other words, but the trumas and maizos were not taken off.
I know, but the thing is because they're onus, so why?
Doesn't matter for what reason it wasn't taken off, it wasn't taken off. And if it wasn't taken off, then it's tevel. Okay. So, ela meditni ayo. So the Gemara says, okay. So now where does that leave us? It leaves us now where we don't have clear proof yet that Rabbi Yehuda does not subscribe to Breira. So the Gemara says, okay, I'll give you clear proof. So the Gemara says, Ayo. It's an interesting name of a Tana. Rashi over here just simply says that's his name. His name is Ayo. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ayo, Didni Ayo. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Now, Ayo is quoting the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, which for us right now is the critical point because we want to demonstrate that Rav Yehuda does not subscribe to Breira. Ein adam asna shnei dvarim ke'echad, ela im bachacham lemizrach, eruv lemizrach, lemarev eruv lemarev, ve'ilu lekan ulekan, ve'ilu lekan ve'lekan lo. So in other words, you got to pick a direction. Now what we're discussing over here is a eruv tchum. Eruv tchum is basically where the basics in a nutshell, in a very, very short, in a succinct fashion, is that going into every Shabbos, you have a makom shvisa, you have a perimeter in terms of where you can go. You cannot go beyond that point in time. 2,000 amas in each direction. If you're in a city, 2,000 amas outside of the city. What you can do, however, is that you can move your point of center, and that's what's called setting up an Erev Tchum. Your new point of center now establishes that as the center point. You obviously have to be able to access that center point from where you are going as a Shabbos, but it moves your point of center. So that gives you now an extension of walking either to the east or to the west, quite frankly, whichever direction you're walking with. It just happens to be, right now we're just talking about east and west. So what you want to do now is you want to set up two Erev Tchumim because you're not sure which direction you want to go. A Talmid Chacham is coming in from either the east or the west, you're really not sure. And so therefore, under those circumstances, you set up one to the east or one to the west. And whichever one is going to be useful for you, that's the one you're going to use. As a basic yisod to the whole Gemara over here, the whole Mishnah over here, you can only make one point of center. You can only have one makom shvisa. You cannot make two makom shvisas, which of course makes perfect sense. Meaning, you only have one center point going into Shabbos. So now the Gemara says, well, if I'm going to use the one to the east, fine. If I'm going to use the one to the west, fine, but I can't use both. The Gemara says, Maishna lekan lekan delo, dein breira, mizrach umarav nami, ein breira. Now let me explain the case even a little bit better. Meaning, in the first case of the Mishnah, Rashi says all this, I'm just paraphrasing Rashi. In the first case of the Mishnah, I have a chacham who's coming in, I just simply don't know which direction. So I set up to the one to the east, and I set up the one to the west, and when I learn which direction he came in, so then that's going to be my makom shvisa. And that works. That's fine. However, if let's say they actually are two Talmidei Chachamim coming in from both directions, and right now I just can't decide which shir I want to hear. One's giving halacha, the other one's saying more midrashim. So I, you know what? I wake up tomorrow morning, I'll decide then. So that the Mishnah says you can't do. And the Gemara says, I don't really understand the difference. Meaning, isn't both of those cases really going to be contingent on the point of Breira? And why in case number one is it okay, in case number two is it not okay? So that's the Gemara's question, and to that the Gemara's answer, Vavinamba. I'm just reiterating the question. Well, if I'm not subscribing to Breira in the latter case of the Mishnah, so then, same thing with the former case as well. So Rav Yochanan says there's a big difference in the actual case itself between the Reisha and the Seifa. What's the big difference? Rav Yochanan says because in the Reisha, what happened is the Chacham already came. I just didn't know about it. This is not a Breira issue. This is the way Rashi describes it, a Gilui Milsa. It's just that the facts already occurred, I just have not yet been informed. So over here, when I receive the information on Shabbos, it's not that I'm making a decision on Shabbos that's retroactive. The decision has been made, I just lacked the necessary information. Rashi describes that as the Gilui Milsa. If, however, I have two Talmidei Chachamim, and I'm not sure right now which one I want to go to, and now it's Shabbos morning, I wake up, and then I decide which Erev I'm going to use, that's a Breira issue. And Rav Yehuda doesn't subscribe to Breira. Where do we stand right now? Rav Yehuda doesn't subscribe to Breira. If Rav Yehuda doesn't subscribe to Breira, so that means that how is it that we're shechting an animal on Yontif? So we're shechting on a Yontif based on, because again, the issue of Muksa is I can't reassign something. You can't reassign something, so how can I shecht an animal on Yontif when going into every single Yontif, the animal is either legado or it's la'achila? So what the Gemara wanted to argue is, but Rav Yehuda subscribes to Breira. The Gemara says it can't be. Rav Yehuda does not subscribe to Breira. So if he does not subscribe to Breira, so the way we set up the case cannot be. It must be that going into Yontif, the animal is Muchan La'adam. It's Muchan La'adam. Just like our Mishnah, where the animal is Muchan La'Shabbos. Sorry. Going into Shabbos, the animal is Muchan La'adam. And so, basically now, the question on the table is, so if on Yontif we're allowed to eat the animal, on Shabbos, we're allowed to eat the animal as well, presumably. And yet, what Rav started off our entire sugya today is that, you know, the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda. Well, why should it be Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda seemingly would allow the consumption of the animal. And again, I want to make this point extraordinarily clear. There's a fundamental difference. On Yontif, you're allowed to shecht. On Shabbos, you're not allowed to shecht. Fine, that is a fundamental difference. But once the animal is shechted, from a muksa standpoint, isn't it the same? Okay. So that was all an attempt of explaining which Rav Yehuda it is. That was our first round of the day, and here we are now round two. El Amar of Yosef, Rav Yehuda de Kalim, it must be the Rav Yehuda regarding the opinion of Kalim, his position on Kalim. None. Kol Kalim and tell him b'shabbos shivrein, we tell him b'vavash yosef main malacha shivrei areva lechasus ben bichavish shivrei zechuchis lechasus ben piapach. So let's say you have a kli that breaks on Shabbos. So the shvarim, the shards. Now, if it poses a threat to somebody or, you know, a risk to somebody, so then, you know, pick them up and move them somewhere else. However, can I, the basic question the Mishnah is dealing with over here is, do the shards retain its status as the kli? Can I use them on Shabbos? So the Tanakhama's position is a more relaxed position. As long as they have some functionality on Shabbos, so then I could use them. If they could be used as a... if they could be used as a basically anything, a lid for another pot, a lid for another bottle, so then they do not lose their muksa, they don't obtain a muksa status. They're still considered muchan. Rav Yehuda, on the other hand, has a much more restricted viewpoint. Rav Yehuda Omer lechas Rav Yehuda Omer uvavashi olsen me'ein malachtan. That in order for the kalim to not lose its muksa status, so it has to not only be still functional, but it has to be functional with the same usage that it was as an entire kli. So, for example, let's add a bowl that break. If I could still use it as a bowl, meaning whatever broken piece now is in my hand, if I could still use it as a bowl, doesn't sound like a great idea. Like little edges, sharp edges, probably. Okay, whatever. In other words, the basic point is, as long as it can be used as it's as originally designed, so then fine. Shivrei zechuchis lasuch lesochan shemen. If let's say the bottle broke, but whatever's remaining now could still be used to hold liquid, hold oil, fine. So me'ein malachtan in, me'ein malachtan acheres lo. And clearly, Rav Yehuda's position is that it has to be used for that function, but even if I could use it for a different function, according to Rav Yehuda, that's not going to be good. So again, it's based on the principles of Muksa. Muksa, according to Rav Yehuda, which again, he has a more limited, let me say it the other way. He has a more expansive understanding of Muksa, and therefore, in order for a kli to not be Muksa, if the kli breaks, it has to have the same functionality.
If it's going to a new function, then Rabbi Yehuda considers like a nolan.
It's like nolan. Again, it's like nolan, right? So I'm a kevin dolo itchem etmol hachmal achasira, and I'm a kevin dolo itchem etmol asura. So the Gemara says, so over here, so same thing when you shut an animal on Shabbos. When you shut an animal on Shabbos, going into Shabbos, it was not set aside for eating that Shabbos. And so therefore, when I shecht it on Shabbos, which again is an Issur D'oraisa, but when I shecht it on Shabbos, so that now means that it is now, for it has a new function to it, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, anytime it has a new function, even though it has usage, but a different usage, so that means now that it's going to be banned because of Muksa. So Amalei Abaye Midami. So once again, Abaye says, I don't think that's comparable. Because Hasami Karakli Vasha Shevakli Vavali Nolad Vasar. So the Gemara says, look, you have Kli, you have Shever Kli. They are two entities. I'll say they're different entities because the Gemara says it. But in other words, but the idea is that it really is something new. And because it's something new with a new function to it, so therefore they're two different entities. But Hachami Kar Uchlo Vasof Ochel. Uchla de'ifras hu. But over here, what are we talking about? The animal, while it's alive, you know what that is? It's food. Now, I understand. We all understand. It's not consumable food, but that's only because it's not shechted. But in other words, how we assign it, the category that it belongs under, it falls under the category of food. So on Shabbos, when we shecht it, now we're cutting it up, you know what it is? It's food. So it's basically food going down to food, just smaller portions of food. The Gemara calls it uchla de'ifras hu. It's just simply a part of the original food. And I know that Rav Yehuda is perfectly comfortable with the idea that when I have food resulting from food, that is not muksa in the least. The Mishnah over here says, now, we know that schita, that squeezing the juice out of a fruit, is one of the malachas on Shabbos. It falls under the category, it's a tolada of the malacha of dash. And yet, so squeezing it on Shabbos would be a malacha. But what if, let's say, the juice was so plump, it was so ripe, the juice was coming out on its own. So according to the Tanakhama, that would be also, that would be forbidden. And for the Tanakhama, the reason why is because once I'm enjoying the juice that's coming out on its own, so it's a gzera, that what's going to happen is I'm going to want to squeeze the fruit some more. Fine. Rabbi Yehuda, huh? Well, that's where we're headed. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Im la ochlan ayotz mehem mutter. The im la mashkin ayotz mehem aser. So Rabbi Yehuda says, well, it really depends on what was the original assignment of the fruit. So if the original assignment was is that I wanted to eat the fruit, so therefore the juice that comes out is just simply part and parcel of the original fruit. However, im la mashkin, but if my original plan was I wanted to juice that particular fruit, so that which comes out of it's going to be usur. Because if I wanted to juice that fruit, and a little juice comes out on its own, and I drink that little juice, I'm going to think to myself, hey, that was good. Let me do that again. But clearly, what Rav Yehuda now is subscribing to is that if the fruit was originally planned for eating, and a little juice comes out, that's fine. Why? Uchla de'efrasu. Because that little juice that comes out is just simply part and parcel of the original food. So it's no different than the animal, meaning the animal going into Shabbos is food. And now on Shabbos, now that it becomes edible, meaning somebody shechted it, and now I'm eating it, it's the same thing, right? To which the Gemara says, Lavit marla amar Rabbi Yehuda amar Shmuel moda haya Rabbi Yehuda l'chachamim b'sali zesim v'anavim. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you know that this said over in the name of Shmuel that Rabbi Yehuda would agree to the chachamim if the basket was made up of either olives or grapes, that under those circumstances it would be usher. Ama, kevin de l'shchita kame, yaiv daite. Hachanami, kevin de l'shchita kame, yaiv daite. So the which the Gemara says is that because when it comes to olives and grapes, the general tendency of the person, the thought process generally is that it is planned to be squeezed. Similarly over here, when it comes to the shchita, that is the general tendency of people in terms of how they assign an animal going into Shabbos, going into Yontif. Meaning, I really do plan on eating it. Now again, I understand. One of the tricky parts of this entire Gemara is that on Shabbos, I'm not really planning on eating it because we're not allowed to shecht it. But at least categorically, it falls under the category of food because eventually we do plan on eating it. So there is this thought that just like by grapes and olives, we plan on squeezing the juice that comes out of it, so too over here. So the Gemara says, so what comes out now is that according to Shmuel's understanding, there really is no difference between the grapes and the olives and that of the and then that of the animal. If that's true, we're kind of stuck. Because again, what we're saying over here is that our Mishnah is going like Rav Yehuda. And Rav Yehuda would say that it is muksa for the duration of Shabbos. So the Gemara says over here, Midi hu taima ela l'rav, hama rav, chalukai Rav Yehuda, filo besali zesim v'avanim. Look, remember, and this goes takes us all the way back to the beginning of Shir today. The entire statement that was originally made today that you're not allowed to eat the animal for the duration of Shabbos that was shechted on Shabbos is all a statement made by Rav. Rav also happens to be of the opinion that Rav Yehuda disagrees both by olives and grapes as well. Meaning olives and grapes, the juice come out of it, is in fact, if I was planning on juicing it, is going to be awesome, but if I was planning on eating it, is going to be okay. It's uchla defrasu. So that means to say now that if Rav Yehuda is going to be arguing on olives and grapes, same thing is going to be true regarding, if he's arguing on olives and grapes, so then he's going to be arguing also on the animal as well. And so that means to say now that within Rav's position, we still don't have a good precedent to set in terms of how Rav Yehuda will aser the animal for muksa. Let's quickly recap because we have now gone through two rounds so far today. Okay, you shechted the animal on Shabbos. The animal now is, the shechita is a kasher shechita. Even though the Mishnah says you're mischayev benafsho, which we're going to talk in more detail tomorrow, about whether it's an act of mezid or whether an act of shogeg, simple reading of the Mishnah is it's an act of mezid. So still the shechita is going to be a good shechita. Good. We discussed in the beginning of Shir today, isn't the Amomer L'chal Shabbos, and why shouldn't that pass the Shechita? And Tosfos raised that, and Tosfos gave two answers. But in the meantime, however, the Gemara's sole focus this morning was that a statement made by Rav that even though the Shechita is a good Shechita, but the animal remains muksa for the remainder of Shabbos, and you're not allowed to eat the animal for the remainder of Shabbos, and our first opportunity to eat the animal will only be on Motzei Shabbos. And the Gemara says, and Rav is subscribing to the opinion of Rebbe Yehuda the Tana, who holds of the principle of muksa. And then, for the remainder of today's daf, what we did is, we looked to see which Rebbe Yehuda's position regarding muksa is most similar to our Mishnah, so that we could see clearly that our Mishnah is a function of Rebbe Yehuda, where it would be muksa for the duration of Shabbos. So far, what we tried this morning is that maybe it has to do with the sheet of Rebbe Yehuda regarding his position of cutting up the nevela for your dog on Shabbos. Rebbe Yehuda, if an animal dies on Shabbos without a shechita, and now you want to cut the animal up, it's a nevela. You want to cut the animal up for your dog on Shabbos, dog food for your on Shabbos. So Rebbe Yehuda says you can't do that. And l'chora, that would be like our Mishnah. The Gemara made a distinction. The Gemara says it's not like our Mishnah. Then, that was try number one, attempt number one. Attempt number two is Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says it has to do with Rav Yehuda regarding the opinion of Kalim. The opinion of Kalim takes us through the idea that in order for something not to be muksa, it has to have the same functionality. If it has a different functionality, so then it would be nolad, and then it would be no good. So objects to that as well, because over here when it comes to an animal and the food that you get from this animal on Shabbos, it's not a different category; it's the same category. It still falls under the category of food. It started off as food; it remains food. Granted, inedible food going into Shabbos because it's not shechted, but still categorically food. And so therefore on Shabbos, this is just simply part and parcel of the original food. It's uchla de efrasu. And so the Gemara says this also is not going to be a good way to explain our Mishnah. So far we went through round one, round two. Tomorrow we're going to go through round three, round four. I think that's it. I think there are four different ways to explain it.